There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast
on the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Today's series that we're beginning, a series today that has a lot of serious points.
Yeah.
You know, and we're you know, some sensitive material.
Yeah.
We're going to walk through. But one thing I do want to say up top before we get into all of it is that, well, yes, all of the practices of these various industries that they have done, they're all wrong.
Yeah.
See, wrong. I'm saying it. They're all completely incorrect.
Good. Correct.
But wouldn't it kind of be nice a little bit if men just came to fix us, right? Wouldn't it be kind of like
nice?
Just the feeling of like, wouldn't it be kind of like just to have the lack of control a little bit, like the men come with the white coats.
Uh-huh.
I've talked about this.
Love
with
it.
Natalie, and Natalie has expressed mm-hmm. permission that when I do finally
straight to camera advice on Instagram.
Yeah, right. As soon as I go completely nuts, you call the Brute Squad.
Yeah.
To pick scoop me up.
Yeah.
I want old fashioned straight jacket.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I want to know this is the end of the line for my insanity.
What mm-hmm. happened to Henry? Well, he started liking Jim Brewer's newer stuff. Welcome to Last Podcast on the Left, everyone. Ben hanging out with Henry and Marcus. What's worse than walking on broken glass? Walking on eggshells. And that's what we're going to be doing in this episode. Can't wait to get into the really upbeat way to kick off 2023, boys. The troubled teen industry.
Yeah.
Part one, focusing on the Alon School.
We are very interested in this topic. This is very similar to the West Memphis 3, that this is a subject that legitimately makes Marcus and I furious.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Kissel's always been a fan.
Always,
because
yeah.
he said something about how, like, the troubled teen community, those are my constituents.
Technically,
yes,
it's all of us.
It is all of us. But this series actually means a lot to us. I think it is cool to start 2023 off
yeah.
with a little bit of a lessons learned.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure,
let's
why
get
not?
Into it.
Now, we've used a ton of sources for this series, so we're going to wait until the end of the entire fucking thing to name them all.
Okay.
But for this episode in particular, the main source is Help at Any Cost by Maya Zulovitz, which is highly recommended for anyone who wants an ocean deep dive into the sadistic industry we're going to be talking about today.
Zulovitz!
If you really want to get into it. But again, remember, just think about this. It's scary when it happens to a kid, but just the idea of just like, all right, you give me my Thorazine. Sounds right. kind of nice.
Is this our version of Scared Straight? Is that what we're doing here?
It is definitely a Scared Straight type. It's Scared Straight times 100. Scared Straight on steroids.
Okay.
This is, yeah, Scared Straight looks at this and is afraid.
I also think that Scared Straight a lot of times deal with kids that are already sort of like facing crimes. Like they're in mm-hmm. like sort of in the criminal justice world, where what we'll find out about the trouble teen industry is that anybody can go.
Yes, also Scared Straight. I've seen the kids today. It didn't work.
What? I think it's a.
They're saying about how they're homosexual. Disgusting.
The children.
They're a little more gender fluid than I remember.
This is great. This is a good way to start. We're going to get lauded for this series.
Now, the standards and practices surrounding the troubled teen industry are some of the most shameful and bizarre in American business, and they're all perfectly legal.
It's business, baby!
Oh, wow.
The programs that purport to fix these so-called troubled teens are still going full force to this day, although some of the more notorious schools have thankfully folded in recent history.
They're learning from the Mormons, and you move to the center, and that's how you get yourself not shut down anymore, is that you do is we're like, all right, let's group spankings, more group yankings. That's how you know you've become a church.
Wow.
Basically, the troubled teen industry, which includes everything from boot camps to wilderness programs to, quote, alternative boarding schools, it capitalizes on parents who are both terrified of their children and too lazy or unimaginative to do anything about it themselves.
Great.
We are going to be very mad this episode specifically.
Mm-hmm. And parents in general.
Oh, yeah. We've tried nothing and we're all out of ideas.
Well, some kids are truly scary, though.
Well, that's what we'll kind of talk about. It's like why we're against the death penalty, right? We're against the death penalty because every once in a while, an innocent person works its way through that system and gets murdered by the state. This is all about the fact that, yes, sure, there are actual, quote unquote, troubled teens that do need a higher level of help. But a lot of these kids just were there because their parents had the money to put them there.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Well, these fears were damn near created by the media and government anti-drug hyperbole, which reached its height in the 80s with all of Nancy Reagan's Just Say No bullshit. Going off those highly successful anti-drug campaigns and the talk shows that propped them up, parents came to think that a single joint could turn their teen into a junkie capable of slaughtering the entire family for just one more hit.
It's kind of cool. It's not what weed does whatsoever. No. It can barely get through Callisto Protocol because I get too stoned. Nancy Reagan, also known for sucking Mad Dog when she was younger.
She sucked that president dumb.
Yes, she did. You're blaming Nancy for his Alzheimer's. Yeah. She sucked all the smart brain cells out.
And the overblown nature of this hysteria naturally provoked overreaction from weak-minded parents.
Well, I know my parents definitely always assumed, because my sister was on drugs. I was not, but my sister was good at school. I was not.
Right.
Because I wasn't good at school and I liked to make movies on the side, they all assumed I was on drugs. So my mom would scour my room again and again and again, only to find condoms. Because somebody be a fuck you, yeah. Right?
Well, you know, if the condom packs are always full, then someone isn't, are they?
They were there. Yeah. And then, but then Jackie's room went unscathed and was full of fucking H and smack and skank and zip.
Yeah, I can't imagine the horror that is searching your teenage child's room. Oh. That's why they're going to get away with anything they want in there.
Yeah.
You need a bigger Roomba.
Yeah.
No, my parents used to find these little charred bits of pornography in my room because one day I had this very large pornography collection.
Sure.
And then one day...
You got it from the pedophile down the street, didn't you?
It wasn't a pedophile. No, it was a child whose dad had abandoned the family and he had left
pedophile. Literally, it's a child's version of a pedophile.
No, his father had left a cooler full of pornography behind and we had divided it amongst us.
Cool.
But then when I got, every once in a while, I get like that sort of like Christian zap into my brain. It's like, oh, I'm going to go to hell for masturbating. Right. So I decided to burn my pornography collection.
Wow.
As I lit the match and I saw my pornography burning.
My dick! No.
I immediately dumped over the trash can and stamped it all out to save my pornography.
Wow.
But then every time I took out, say, a copy of Club Confidential or a Penthouse or
smelled
Skin.
Like a fucking campfire.
It smelled like a campfire. And the little pieces of charred pornography would fall off. And scatter my bedroom.
Is this why you like hiking? Is it because it's just campfires get you hard?
Really hard. Imagine if Heath Ledger's Joker would have done that. Wouldn't it have sent a bad message that indeed he was greedy? Also, I do like that your friend's dad was like, you're going to want to keep the cherry cold. Put it in a cooler.
Yeah, but he actually had so much pornography that it overflowed out of the cooler into a secondary trash bag. Great. Big black garbage bag.
That's the only way to keep it. That's the only way to keep it. Just a big hefty bag full of butt and ass magazine.
Yeah, if he got it sent in for crediting like they do comic books, it would have been a 10 out of 10.
Yeah. You got to put some backboards in some of this.
That's good.
Now, these parents are sold a bill of goods by the troubled teen industry. The troubled teen industry, they say that the only thing that'll fix your child, or in some cases, stop them from going bad in the first place, is sustained brutality and cruelty, although these practices are sanitized under the term tough love.
Tough love is an actual business term to them, like it's an official term that they use. And it is interesting, maybe we'll find more as we go, not in this episode, but later on, I'm doing some research into it. It's kind of interesting to see how many of these tactics that are used to break down the human personality is the same shit that they did in MKUltra. Mm. It's the same shit that they've done across the world, it seems, of
forever.
Like how to turn somebody into a ghost.
It's the same thing Bobby Knight did when he was the head coach of Indiana University.
Yeah?
Basically.
He did group spankings?
He was horrible.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was bad. Yeah, he was the basketball coach at Texas Tech when I was there.
He was very bad.
I think there's a lot of college basketball players all spanking each other. I think there's a lot of that on the internet.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah. There's also a lot of college basketball shit going down right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bobby Knight got fired for getting into a fight with the athletic director at a salad bar at the grocery store.
I'd pay money to see it.
I would.
Yeah.
Well, basically, the parents are told that the fault in their child is not in their own parenting, but rather in the children themselves, who are all out-of-control monsters ready to destroy society the moment you turn your backs on them.
All you gotta do is keep these kids fed, mm-hmm. give them their cherry colas, right?
Cherry
give
cola.
Them their screen time.
You think the kids are really into cherry cola
these
days?
That's all they do. I know what kids like. They like their cherry cola. They're like, their, you gotta let the kids vape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to let the kids vape?
Let the kids vape.
That's what the whole series to me is about.
We'll rename it.
It's stressful to be a child. They know that they're going nowhere.
To be honest, it is.
And even outside of that, kids with ADHD, learning disabilities, mental health issues, and various other neurodivergent conditions like autism, they're also sent to these schools.
They tried to send me, but I didn't fit.
Is that like physically or just or the mental breakdown?
Physically, mentally.
Did they really try to send you to a big school?
Oh, man. I was
this is
I was
what
ADHD.
We were kind of.
Yeah, we were wondering. It's like,
I was diagnosed when I was like 10. I remember I went to a therapist when I was 11, but then she started crying and I had to go.
Yeah, I mean, I make my therapist cry several times, yeah. And then I feel like you should pay me.
You just tell them the hard truth about life. Yeah. But I still do that to this day. It was great. I got mad at a casino dude in London.
I remember.
Made him cry.
Well, at these schools, sadistic staffers attempt to quite literally beat, scream, and torture disorders away. But by allowing the use of these so-called tough love techniques, parents are guaranteed that their formerly rebellious and bothersome teenagers will, by the end of the program, turn into happily obedient and respectful members of society.
And obedient is the key here, because it's not really about changing the behavior for somebody from bad to good. I feel like those words, I mean, like they use that in the explanation in the pitch for these schools.
And it's also very abstract, right? Because if you were a Hitler youth, being good would be doing something horrible.
Exactly, right? So there is that, but obedient is the key, right? Because that's what it's about. It's about you are not fitting into our current model of society. We want to strip you of everything that's inside of you. They want to strip you down to an automaton so that you could go back to being a worker and a buyer. Yes.
Yeah. I remember sitting in class. There was some medication they experimented on me with. And you just sit there and you're like going crazy in your head like a really fast Pong game. Mm-hmm. And you're horribly anxious. But you just sit there. And so the teachers would be like, I think he's doing great.
Meanwhile, your brain is going bing, 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 bing.
It was horrible. It's a torture.
Christ.
Yes. My mom just tied me to the carriage. She
that was
tied
for
me
the
to
best.
Herself. Yeah.
That was for the best. I actually empathize with your mother.
Yeah.
Well, this guarantee of success is given credence by the self-published success rates that the institutions themselves release, which is almost never below 90%.
Whoa.
See here, Jeremy, you got a dirty boot? Jeremy will lick that right up for you. We made him a perfect
In addition, these schools usually have the sign-off of various medical professionals, politicians, and judges who all swear that these programs do indeed work. The problem, though, is that there's never been any sort of reliable study done on the effectiveness of these programs. But what we do know is that many of these teens come out of the experience highly traumatized, developmentally stunted, and suicidal.
I think that it is very telling that when you look up the information on this subject, a lot of what comes out of it, it's like it's always like WASP, survivor, Straight Inc, survivor. And there's a lot of it. Like it's weird how like you see more like, obviously I remember the way I kind of compare it is what the Oteros did after the crimes of BTK, where like they've talked about it, but that's kind of one family. It talks a lot about like what that one serial killer did to them, where like these people are walking around with whatever the fuck it is that happened to them in these schools. It just destroys people's personalities. And it seems the only way to get through it, which is what they want you to do it, is you got to join up. You have to allow it in and become one of your masters in order for you to escape it.
Mm-hmm. Likewise, any stories of mistreatment or abuse, those sorts of survivor stories that you're talking about, those are dismissed as lies, the rantings of a few bad apples. In fact, very few...
Apples can't talk.
Boom.
Joke on that.
Boom.
In fact, very few of those complaints have led to any sort of investigation, and very few of those investigations have ever resulted in even an indictment, much less a conviction. Now, as far as those various medical professionals who endorse these programs go, it's usually the case that they're either connected to the institution in some way financially.
What? Market!
Money is a thing?
or they're simply on the take. It's like doctors recommending OxyContin because Purdue Pharma gave them a free weekend at Pebble Beach. It's the exact same thing.
Or Marcus, a judge getting a kickback from a juvie system.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But you guys are both talking like a couple of Ruskies. Couple of pinko motherfucks, right? Because what it comes down to isn't the exchange of money. Doesn't that make it good?
Could.
See, because they made money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's good because they all profited off the industry.
Much like the original Batman 1960-something movie where he zaps everyone into a puddle of dust, money is speech, so we should just be replaced with stacks of bills, record it for 2 hours, that's the episode.
You
that's
just it. Look at us as several bags of money. Quarters.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, and that's your show.
Perfect.
Back to show.
Educational consultants, meanwhile, are openly paid for recommendations, online endorsements, and enrollments. It's pretty much it's a referral commission.
Right.
And almost invariably, the politicians who support these programs usually count the owners of the institutions as some of the highest of their donors.
Real angel donators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can just see the politicians going in there looking at the new crop of potential kids to molest.
Oh, they can't wait, dude. You're making perfect little silent members of my abuse clinic.
I was just reading about Dennis Hastert, the 2010 Speaker of the House. Yeah. He still owes his victim some cash.
He's wrestling. Wasn't that his thing?
Yeah, that was wrestling. He took it to another level.
Yeah. I just feel like we don't need... I feel like wrestling needs to have an age parameter. Same age, rest the same age.
Sure, yeah. I could see that. Yeah.
12, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. 12:36 is bad.
Not, unless you're properly coaching, but yeah, he wasn't. Yeah.
We don't really know. We need to put him in a scissor lock. You know what I mean? In the head.
Well, for example, when we're talking about political donations, the co-founders of the infamous anti-drug program Straight Inc., a favorite of Nancy Reagan, and one of the worst when it came to psychological abuse, they were powerful members of the Republican Party. They donated $125,000 to George H.W. Bush's 1988 presidential campaign, and one of them got an ambassadorship.
Wow. Yeah, dude. Awesome? You got to go all the way to Denmark on our dime. But it's also cool to be ambassador because then you can't legally commit crimes.
Exactly.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
But speaking of government, if we go just a little further back into American history, we can see that the sort of punishment-based schools that make up the troubled teen industry, they have a long tradition in this country, although they were started not to correct behavior, but to annihilate culture. While much of the attack therapy techniques we'll be discussing later came from more modern sources, the physical and sexual abuse components used in the troubled teen industry have many of the same hallmarks as the American Indian boarding schools of yore.
Yes, and we did, and Canada had them as well. It's these places where they go and it is they decide that we're going to destroy your entire culture via destroying the children of your culture.
For hundreds of years, the American government used these boarding schools to stamp out any vestiges of Native identity in the pursuit of assimilating the indigenous American population into white American society, while paradoxically keeping them on the reservations away from white American society.
And what they did, they would look at nature, they would look at a beautiful tree, and the Native American would say, "What a beautiful tree, giving of life." And they say, "No, boo the tree.
Boo.
We don't like nature, boo the tree."
You look at that tree and be like, "Fuck you, tree. You're not a cabinet yet."
"Fuck you, tree. What are you good for, tree?"
Well, at these boarding schools, indigenous children were forcibly removed from their families and put into institutions that were almost always run by, guess who?
A wonderful, loving mother.
The Catholic Church.
Yeah, they did it.
It's good for them.
Now, these children had their hair cut short, they weren't allowed to speak their own languages under threat of severe physical abuse, and even their names were taken away and completely changed to something more Anglo.
Yeah, wow. They do it from outside in. I kind of had a weird epiphany about Catholics the other day, and I realized that the tension within the Catholic Church really has to be quite a bit. It's like every week you go, you see this super hot guy.
Yes.
Like
always
up in front
hot.
Of you, right?
Always.
Like in Paris, when we went to the Catholic. Mm-hmm.
Jesus, mm-hmm. You're talking about.
Yeah. You look up here and like Jesus is fucking in Paris. It moved. Like my dick.
Your
moved.
Dick
like
did little, move. Because, he's powerful. He's loving.
Because
sure.
In Paris, they made him kind of like androgynous too. Yeah. He looked like Prince, right? Like he was like, it's crazy. You see this sexy guy with his brown nipples and his fucking, and he's got that cool scar on his side.
He's got the V.
Like D'Angelo.
And you're like, look, but don't touch. Taste, but don't swallow. Devil's advocate. And he's
like
got
that.
You jumping from one foot to the next. And you think, and he's up there laughing his sick motherfucking ass off.
Yeah. Well, this has nothing to do with the topic. You absolutely derailed the entire thing to talk about your sexual attraction to the French. Jesus.
Yeah. And you posited it as like, I figured out something about the Catholics today.
I am one. It's in me.
Well, as far as these boarding schools went, unclean and overpopulated living conditions contributed to widespread and potentially fatal disease. Mm. Children were underfed, bounties were offered for students who tried to run away, and many of them died by suicide at the school.
Ugh.
To add insult to injury, the school would often force students to lay their deceased friends in a coffin and bury the body themselves in the school cemetery.
Oh my God.
Which is
that's
an incredible...
not a good school.
Yeah, dude.
No school should have a fucking cemetery.
Unless Wednesday Adams goes to your school.
Oh my God. You should not
have a place where everyone normally buries the children. Yeah, it's not good. Jeez. You're right.
To that point, the Department of the Interior knows of 53 marked and unmarked burial sites that are home to more than 500 children and teenagers who died between 1819 and 1969, when the last of these schools were closed.
That's the horror movie I want to see. You moved the tombstones, but you didn't move the bodies.
Oh, yeah.
The revenge of these children.
Yeah. Yes. But again, if it was a troubled teenage ghosts, technically that's sometimes they come back.
Troubled teenage zombie is an awesome movie.
Wow. Yeah. And we can connect to it. It's relatable. Yeah.
That's My Boyfriend's Back.
Whoa.
Oh.
My Boyfriend's
Back.
It is. It's
horrible. Isn't that nice that he came back?
Yeah.
Live from your grave.
You know what's nice about a new year? You never know what you're going to get up to, right? But one thing you can get up to is you can change your entire business structure. Try to get some money. Try to gain efficiency. You know what you can do that with? Stamps.com. Stamps.com, you can print your own postage. And who doesn't like printing stamps? I love it. I spend half my day doing it. You never have to stress about finding the fastest and cheapest shipping solutions. Now, me, we use Stamps.com all the time here at Last Podcast Network because we're always sending out, like, my manifestos. But I use Stamps.com so that I don't have to leave my shed in Montana where I'm at when we're not banking episodes for Last Podcast on the Left. And then the man comes to my shack. He takes my manifestos and he takes them straight to the various not targets that I want them to read my materials at. It's that easy. Start the new year by saving serious money on mailing and shipping. Get started with stamps.com today. Sign up with promo code LEFT for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code LEFT.
Well, as far as sexual abuse goes, these schools were among the worst when it came to abuse from nuns and priests, because at these boarding schools, it was all done out in the open to the point where it was coordinated.
You well, just see again, the nun like the landlord from Kingpin.
But it does, it's weird too, because again, dehumanizing the kids.
Yeah.
They were already dehumanized because they were indigenous, right? They were already, we need to make them people. Yeah. That's a part of what this is, right? Yeah. We need to make them, we're raising them up. And so they felt like, oh, these kids, we have a free pass on these kids.
Yeah.
Because nobody cares.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
At some schools, nuns and priests would rotate children and teenagers amongst staff members. And because they would get tired
for
of
sex.
A kid. Yeah, for sex.
Oh,
they would get
God.
Tired of a kid and be like, why don't you take them for a little while?
God.
And then they just kind of trade them around. Now, once these kids left these schools, they were entirely unequipped to live in either American or tribal society. Mm. In addition, they carried rarely treated PTSD that often led to lifelong struggles with addiction and or suicide.
And as we'll see time and time again in this series, it's because they did not really think of kids as little people.
Yeah.
They just thought that they were like, you're an automaton until you get to go die in the war when you're 18 years old.
And I'm sure we'll get into the pipeline to prison because that's probably the only place they could function.
It's extremely short-term thinking in every way whatsoever. It's basically sending them back so they can stay out of their parents' hair until they turn 18.
Yeah, and then they're everybody else's problem.
Yeah.
Right.
And while the systemic annihilation of hundreds of cultures is, of course, entirely different from the simple greed behind the troubled teen industry, I think the comparison still holds, because both used many of the same physical, mental, and emotional punishments with the ultimate goal of assimilation, quote, for their own good.
Never is.
No.
Now, the biggest difference between the American Indian boarding schools and the troubled teen schools is that in most cases, the parents voluntarily decide to send their children away to the troubled teen schools. Mostly, these parents in upper and middle class families paid out of pocket with tuition that's sometimes on par with Ivy League universities.
Straight Inc. for 1 year for per student was 72 grand.
Holy crap.
These schools.
This is like 60s, 70s money.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Just give it to the kid.
Yeah.
No.
Have him move out.
Nah.
Like, you're 72 grand. Go.
Get out of here.
Yeah,
get out of my
hair. And then you become, that's how you have a million Andy Warhols.
Oh, that would be a nightmare.
Yes.
Andy Warhol was a poor boy from Pittsburgh.
I know. I know. I've seen his grave. I've been there.
Yeah, yep. How is it?
It's nice.
Very nice.
Yeah, he just sits there. Yeah. It's not moving around a lot.
He's a poor boy. That's how he knew so much about soup.
Yep. And they say bananas. We can't make the subject funny. So many people say they can't make it
Andy
funny.
Andy Warhol. Yes.
Well, these schools, the ones that are mostly paid out of pocket, these are like the infamous CDU institutions, which are now being publicly attacked by their most high-profile alumnus, Paris Hilton.
Yep.
No kid.
Who is basically shuttled straight from a sexually abusive troubled teen program into reality television back in the 90s.
Wow. That was how we used to make our movie stars back in the day, kids. They were these fucking Nepo babies. Like, they all coming out now. Paris Hilton was born into money, like a good celebrity needs to be done.
Well, she's the Hilton family, but she was never a movie star. She was in the new House of Wax. I do remember the audience cheered when she died. It was a great death scene.
It was a good death scene,
but she did work with some farm animals.
She also played up the character quite a bit. What we now know about Paris Hilton was that a lot of what we saw of her was kind of a creation of hers. Like, there was I actually saw an interesting video recently where you saw the difference between her Paris Hilton voice and her real voice, where she's like on the phone with somebody, her voice is like two octaves deeper.
Hi, this is Perry.
Get those Crocs in my fucking house now. All right. Hey, I'm making a new cool.
Other schools, however, besides CDU, they are able to get in on the insurance scam and make their money that way.
Good old-fashioned American way.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I've been dealing with a lot of insurance recently, and man, insurance scams must be very hard. Just get a job.
That's the thing, is that they're working with the insurance scam, the insurance industry.
Ultimate
You're
scam.
Trying to get money from the insurance industry.
Yeah, which they don't want
to
do.
They were trying to make money for the insurance industry.
And that's very easy to do. They love that about you.
They really like that. Yeah. Other schools took government subsidies when judges shuttled lower-income teens into these programs as a quote-unquote alternative to incarceration. Mm. But to that point, one kid who spent time in both an alternative school and a maximum security prison said that the school was actually far worse because, at least in prison, which is one of the most dehumanizing places in existence, he said he felt like more of a human being.
Well, because the most insidious thing of all is that they turn the kids against themselves.
Yeah.
Lord of the Flies.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps the most incredible part, though, is that some parents send their kids to these schools just in case. Because the industry says that even if you got a good kid who's just a little rebellious, it couldn't hurt to put a stop to it before the rebellion gets worse. It's like killing a fly with a hammer.
It's very difficult to kill a fly with a hammer.
It really is. What's the rebellion are we talking about here? Are they listening to Janis Joplin?
It's everywhere.
Each parent has a different idea of exactly what rebellion is.
That's the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like hey, he's staying out all night. It might be she smokes. I found a pack of cigarettes in her purse, you know?
Yeah, which is, like, again, normal teenage offenses. And then it goes up to kids that are, like, serial rapists.
Yeah, it could be he sexually assaulted three girls. All of these kids are all in the same fucking place.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Now, evidence shows that grouping teens together and labeling them all as deviants actually enhances antisocial behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And there are countless stories of healthy teenagers with natural rebellious streaks leaving these schools as shattered human beings. In one case, an average kid named Fred Collins was forcibly enrolled in the aforementioned Straight Ink program when he was 19 because his brother had the drug problem.
They literally just lumped him in, thinking like, oh, he learned from his brother. He's definitely going to get it. Meanwhile, then he then drops him into, from what I can see, Straight Ink was rough.
Really
rough. Yeah, it sounds like it. But even at 19, his parents were able to send him?
I suppose so.
Okay.
I mean, that's a strange thing. I had that same question.
Maybe he signed off. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. But it's like Straight Ink is one of those things where, you know, they sit you down in a group and they're like, you're a drug addict. And this kid Fred's like, no, I'm not really. Like, I think I've smoked weed a
couple
of times.
Sounds like a typical drug addict. Sounds they like always did denials the first step.
It's, yeah. That's what they would do. And it would slowly escalate more and more and more to screaming. And like they're screaming like, you're a fucking drug addict. You're a drug addict. And, you know, you've got adults screaming at you. You've got kids screaming at you until finally you're gaslit enough where you admit I'm a drug addict. But then you've also got this cognitive dissonance of like, but I don't remember doing drugs, but they're telling me I'm a drug addict and I'm a drug addict. And it breaks their fucking brain.
Little do they know I'm actually a public masturbator. Yes, I got away with it again.
Well, after 4 months, Collins escaped in a panic. He believed that he was a drug addict
after
4 months. And such was his anxiety that when a friend of his sheltered him after the escape, Fred pulled a rifle on a guy who showed up at the front door wearing a white coat. And he thought, oh, fuck, the white coats are here to get me. That guy's from Straight Ink. He's going to fucking bring me back. And he put a rifle in a stranger's face.
He almost made a murderer.
Yeah. Now, part of the reason why these places are so horrific is not just because of the policies and philosophies they have, although those are terrible. Mostly, it's because of who the organizations choose to enforce those policies and philosophies.
It's interesting because even saying, like, organizations who choose, when, like, a lot of times it's like these guys that showed up to create these organizations are like, all right, who's going to be the one that's in control of all these kids? And then he pulls up a mirror and he's like, looks like it's you, Barry.
Right.
Let's go get these kids.
It's, I mean, what kind of sociopath would want this job?
Yeah.
I mean,
an actual sociopath. Like, you literally have to be a fucked up person.
Right. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, it's like, as far as people who are like sociopaths who are attracted to positions of authority, you know, how they're like, you know, there are cops that are sociopaths
CEOs
who are attracted
like that,
to the, you know, to being a police officer. Some of them go to COs, yeah. But this is like below COs. This is even below juvenile hall.
Oh my gosh.
And it's so also
because it's private enterprise,
it's
too.
Not regulated in any way whatsoever. Professional psychiatrists, therapists, psychologists, doctors of any kind, they were rarely ever on the staffs of these institutions because they're too fucking expensive. And likewise, the people who create these programs, they're just some average fuckhead who's making shit up as they go along.
And we're saying this blanketly across the board because it comes up with every single one of these groups that you read about. It's just a businessman.
Right.
Some other guy. Like, it really is just that. And then a lot of times it's somebody that's already been a part of one of these programs to begin with and then starts up their own brand new world of pain.
You know, I just think that Andrew Tate has a lot of good ideas and that's why I'm applying for this job. I know what the kids need. I will be a great leader for these children.
Yeah, everybody got to know alphas and betas.
Betas and alphas.
Yeah.
See, the point of these programs from a business perspective is pure greed. You exploit fear and you justify it by saying you're making society a better place. But many times the people who run and staff these places, they gain genuine joy from abusing others.
Right. Yeah.
See, the people who are attracted to these schools are either bullies looking to be in positions of easy authority, the easiest authority there is over children, or they're former students of the programs who, quote, graduate into jobs at the very institutions who abused them in the first place.
That's how you know it works.
Yeah.
We just keep making more of them.
Mm-hmm. If I may use a pop culture reference, it's pretty much Camp Krusty. It's Simpsons Season 4, Episode 1.
Oh, yeah, yes, and what a wonderful pop reference that is from Season 4 of The Simpsons. The show has been on for 30 years, which means that's a 26-year-old reference.
Hey, that's what we know here.
Yeah.
That's okay. what we know.
No, it works perfectly.
That was 1997.
Actually, it was more like 1994.
Great, so I could cry. Thank you for the caveat to get pop culture-y.
I'm just going to go dig a grave.
1994, that was the season when Conan O'Brien was in charge. It's also Marge versus the Monorails and season. Well, it's just one of the classics.
Speaking of youth, I'm happy you're connecting with the
youth. This is what kids like. Cherry Cola. Ages old Simpsons. And I want to talk about the lunch lady, the Chris Farley youth.
Oh, great sketch. Yeah.
Great sketch. But I mean, in that episode, the bullies are the counselors, abuse is the norm, and the entire thing is run by a guy named Mr. Black, who makes toast to the concept of evil in pursuit of profit.
It's probably a direct... He's probably inspired by these things.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Black. Concerning the staff at one alternative school, 5 resident directors responsible for 45 kids each, they were all graduates of the program. Mm. But, of course, they're like 19, 20, 21.
Jeez.
They have no college degrees. They have no experience in social services. They were just kids who had very recently been abused and were immediately put into positions to heap that abuse upon more kids.
Yeah,
and
now
it gets
you do
worse
it.
Every single time.
Of course, yeah.
Now, as far as their techniques go, These troubled teen programs use tortures that are banned by the Geneva Convention.
Wow.
They use beatings, extended isolation, restraint, public humiliation, sensory deprivation, sleep deprivation. It's fucking Abu Ghraib.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's what WASP and WASP, which we're going to get into now, it's like they have with the hangout room.
Well, this, of course, is nothing to say of the emotional and mental tortures these kids are put through. But the justification behind these punishments can be summed up in the philosophy of a school called WASP, which closed in 2006. In WASP, seminars were actually held for parents before the kids were sent to the school with the goal of brainwashing the parents into believing that the brutal techniques used at WASP were justified.
Well, of all of them, that they worked the parents harder than a lot of the other groups.
Oh, yeah.
WASP did have it because there's a lot of testimony of these parents. They hold these big group dinners and it's them like pumping the parents being like, we're going to change your kids. We're going to do this stuff. And you have all these parents being like, I don't know what to do with my son. He won't eat spaghetti. I need to get him back on the spaghetti train. We're Italian. It's racist that he won't. And then immediately now he's getting like group beat.
Yeah. Jeez, mostly when parents go to events like this, they just subscribe to a timeshare.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I think actually there might have been some timeshare mixed in.
Yeah, there may have been a little MLM coming up as well. Yeah.
Maybe some swinging.
Mike, Marcus, that's just you again.
It's fun. No, it's
that's
fun.
A projection.
If parents are going to be on vacation.
I'm just saying, I've seen some documentaries.
No, that's your projection.
There's some swinging going on at certain cruises.
Honestly, I have found
out. Not what we're talking about.
Since we got married, though, don't you see that there are more swingers?
Oh,
there are way a lot more swingers than you think that there are. And then you'd be just surprised.
Because you guys are a group of lonely, sad people on the inside. Not you guys necessarily yet, but it does happen.
But also,
hey, baby, what if we open it up just a little bit?
But it's always nice because there's always some ugly dude and his hot wife.
Yeah.
Oh, your wives are going to love that.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Would you rather it be a hot dude? Because then you have the image of just like,
I feel like hot dudes get laid as much as ugly men. I feel like actually it really plays out to the same.
I don't. Okay.
Hey, Fernando, don't you look at me.
I think that
if you do the math.
It's really not the truth.
Not, yeah,
we're
going to
go.
Truth.
We're going to sort
not
it
the
out.
Truth, not the truth at all. Well, WASP justified their beatings using one simple phrase. They said, there's no right or wrong. There's just what works. And what doesn't.
Right and wrong. There's right and wrong because you know what I find? Because with bees, right? Bees are fun and a good collaborative insect.
Yeah.
But a wasp is mean. A wasp is like the school shooter of bugs.
They are very mean. You got to turn the lights off and then they can't fly.
Really?
Yeah.
They can't fly at night?
Have you
they
been talking to fucking Smokey the Bear?
No, bees,
what are you talking about?
Bees don't fly at night.
No, bees are wasps.
Wasps and bees.
They don't fly at night.
They don't fly at night.
Why not?
Because they fucking don't like to fly at
night. Can they make
night.
The troubled teen industry series work?
I'm serious.
Can they
this
figure out the proper
knowledge.
Angles to joke about?
Huh. Most bees, including honeybees and bumblebees, can't fly at night.
They don't fly at night. They chill out.
Well, you're saying don't. He's saying can't.
Yeah, they don't because
I'm
they can.
They won't. I think these bees are fucking lazy.
Yeah.
Say, oh, busy as a bee. Not at night, I guess.
Yeah.
No.
Bees don't fly at night. Wasps fly at night, but not well.
I'm there sorry I did this.
There you go.
I brought bees into this.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, as an example of what, quote unquote, worked for WASP, students were commonly punished with handwritten essays that ran up to 150,000 words.
Dang.
It's roughly 300 pages.
Oh, my God.
God, I wish I could figure out how to get that fucking output.
Yeah. Well, students were required to sit in a dark room in a chair with no back support for 8 hours a day, constantly writing until they'd reached 300 pages. And sometimes, for no apparent reason, a staff member would walk in, rip up the essay, and make the student start over.
It's almost like you were never supposed to complete it.
Mm. Yeah.
When it came to physical punishment, WASP students would be made to stand, kneel, sit, or lay on a cement floor without moving for 30 minutes at a time for 8 hours a day. The cement floor was also uneven, which made any position painful.
This was called the hangout room.
Yeah.
And you'd sit there, right? You literally would lay on your back. And you'd have you weren't allowed to speak to anybody else because with all of these issues, they all kind of inspired they were all inspired by Synanon and these various groups. And so they all had hierarchies. So it's always like if you come in at a certain, you work your way up at certain levels.
Right.
And like a lot of this was done to equalize everybody to them. Right. So you'd go into the hangout room. Anybody of any level would go in there, but they're not allowed to speak. They'd be fed beans and then just be kept up all night.
Mm-hmm. There'll be some noises going on.
Because of the beans.
Because of the beans.
Oh.
It's the magical fruit. Even though I believe it's a vegetable.
I thought it was crying because of the gas.
I don't think they're allowed to cry.
No.
No, no they're not. A lot of them, boiled chicken was a big meal at these places. Wasp was big on boiled chicken. Yeah, but that was
dogs,
dinner.
Because
that's the thing is that you'd have rice all the rest of the time, but then you'd get that boiled chicken, which was supposed to be a reward for surviving the day.
That's not the worst thing we've heard, but that's bad.
Yeah. It's the top two for me.
Yeah, it's sad. It's boiled chicken. It's sad.
And even outside of punishments, teens at a Wasp facility in Tijuana had calluses and blisters on their feet from being made to run laps without shoes. All of them were extremely dirty, and a lot of them were kept in dog cages.
Jesus.
In the worst example, one kid was made to lay prone in his underwear for 3 nights while fire ants crawled all over him. If he dared move, he'd get shocks from a cattle prod.
No, that's going to keep him up to crystal methamphetamine.
Absolutely.
That's how that's going to work. Way to,
it's the cattle prod touch that really keeps a man off the marijuana.
Mm-hmm. Jeez.
But with all these extremely dodgy and dangerous behaviors happening at all these schools, and with extremely unqualified people staffing them, it was inevitable that some kids were and are going to die.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to fatalities, though, no part of the troubled teen industry is deadlier than the wilderness programs.
The wilderness programs scare the living fuck out of me.
I saw a 2020 episode on these.
These things scare the living shit out of me. It's literally if Mengele ran the Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
It is, you just go on marches.
Yeah.
It is very scary.
Yeah. And denied resources, denied food, even though it's right there in front of you. Ugh. I mean, it's full torture.
Yeah.
Now, one of the first wilderness programs was Challenger.
Ooh, never name something after a shuttle that blows up.
And that was the inspiration.
Yeah, because it was named in 1987, right after the Challenger blew up.
Hey, can we think maybe give us some time? Give us some time. Yeah. This is a new car. Have you checked out the Honda 911? It's incredible. It just keeps going and going. It's a 22-year long.
Is that right? Wow. I heard it randomly explodes.
Well, Challenger was founded by Steve Cardassano in 1987.
I'm not trusting anyone. I'm not to judge, but I'm sorry. I'm not going to trust an Italian on this.
You would be really surprised, especially, outside. Yeah, if this was a gnocchi camp, I'd be like, ooh, okay.
You see that plane? You want to shoot that plane? It's looking at you.
Hey, look at you. But no, there's a lot of Italians in this whole series.
There really are. Actually, the Italians kind of run the game.
Is that
being
right?
Honest.
Yeah, we'll get there.
I want a Norwegian man.
No, we actually, the Norwegians are very severe.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, in 1987, Steve and his co-investor, Oliver North, that Oliver North.
Yes.
Ollie North? Ollie North,
yes.
That guy.
He was his co-investor.
Yeah, dude. No, it's not good.
Cool.
There's a lot of people involved in this shit. Well, they found that they could maximize profits by just putting kids outside.
Oh, maximizing profits.
Yeah. Because
you don't have to build a structure.
No.
You just put them outside.
The money makes it right, which is why we are currently recording in a tent in a parking lot outside of a Vons.
Absolutely.
Because we want everyone to know we are thrifty.
Yeah. In addition, Steve could rationalize denying food to kids and giving them shit equipment. That's a survival thing. It's part of the treatment.
Oh, that's how you survive in 1986 America. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
It's called How to Make Someone Homeless.
Yeah. It's just very scary. This is extremely scary. Yeah.
And even though the cost of one program was upwards of $12,000 per kid, Steve's untrained counselors were paid only $800 a month.
God.
See, by going on talk shows like Donahue and Geraldo, Steve made his own good publicity.
No. You see, this is the thing, right? These kids that come out of it, the best part about it is that nothing makes a kid better for society than living amongst struggling with squirrels. For long periods of time, I find that the squirrels rehabilitate the kids on their own because they look and they understand, now we're on a pine cone economy. You gotta get the pine cones. How hard is that? You gotta go find the pine cones. You gotta keep the pine cones from other people.
Well,
why
fantastic.
Are my pine cones better than yours? Gotta think about that. Maximus.
Thanks for being on the show. Up next, Satanists who like to fuck pineapples. Welcome to Donahue.
Save those pineapples, though, because, yeah, they're fucked, but they can still be food.
Well, I'm sure anyone who watched daytime TV in the 80s and 90s knows daytime talk shows loved trouble teen programs.
Oh, love
them. How many fucking boot camp episodes have you seen?
Dude, I watched, there was just a clip on my Instagram about the kid who the guy's like, "You want me to be your father? Do you want me to be your father?"
And he's just like, "I never had a dad."
No, the kid literally says, "Yes." And the guy's like, "Well, that kind of derails the entire thing.
You just scared me straight, kid."
Kids are just so sad.
Well, because again, we did this joke on the live show about like the concept of like Oprah pumping in all the satanic panic at fucking 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I wondered why I'd come home and my mom would just be like, "We're going through your things now." It's like she's just getting pumped full of anti-kid propaganda all day.
I think my mom threw all her cough syrup away because of a 2020 episode, and I was like, "I'm stealing booze.
I'm sick, Mom.
It's okay."
Well, these talk programs, they did more to publicize the quote-unquote benefits of the troubled teen program more than anyone, and they did it for free.
Wow.
Now, using Steve Carcetano's model, a woman named Gail Palmer, who had no outdoor experience or training of any kind, she opened her own program called Summit Quest, and she upped the price to $13,900 per kid.
That's because of the quest.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Yeah, you're on. You're gonna want to join this quest.
Yeah, she's got a writer on staff.
Okay.
Because of Gail's inexperience, a 15-year-old girl named Michelle Sutton died of dehydration just months after the program was established.
Yeah, because we worked really, really hard not to be forest dwellers anymore.
We're just not that anymore. But again, it's this punishment thing. It's this idea of like, we're going to make you strong.
Yeah.
But kids die, though.
Yeah.
Well, it's something also about the 80s. It makes me think of Dream Warriors. So everyone kind of has the puffy hair and hoop earrings and stuff. These are cool chicks and dudes.
Yeah. But a hallmark of wilderness programs is it's routinely denying food or water for days at a time.
It is really stupid.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're trying to.
Water is a good thing.
Water is a good thing. Yeah.
They're trying to break your spirit. They're trying to make they do what they do in cults and what we did to interrogate people. It's that you fucking take them out where they don't know where the hell they are.
Yeah.
You disorient them. You keep them up all night. You make sure that they're dehydrated, hungry. You walk them for days. You do all this shit just to feel like, because you're trying to, you're in your mind, you're like, no, being a zombie is good.
On a much less severe level, back in the day when they were doing like football practices, no water. You don't want water. Your water's for pussies. Mm-hmm. One water break every 2 hours. They did stop that practice.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they realized kids
water,
are dying.
Water's good.
Yeah.
Makes you stronger.
Yeah. I don't know what it is about having water that makes you weak. Why are you a pussy if you're thirsty?
Was it like that for you too?
Yeah.
I don't know why. Like I don't
know.
Understand.
Ed was telling me about a thing called bull in the ring that they used to do too, where they also beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah, that's fun. You need to do it hydrated.
Yeah, you go do it hydrated. Yeah, every 2 hours they'd let us go over to the pipe
for like
which
10
is just,
seconds.
It was just a big piece of PVC pipe with holes in it, and they'd turn on the hose.
The hose.
So it's basically, just a bunch of
kids. Like you're getting water like you're a bunch of yard
dogs. Yeah, and then if you take
animals,
more than 10 seconds, your buddy's like, "Hurry up, man, we only got 2 minutes."
Yeah. I was in drama with the girls, and they were in their underwear, and that was awesome. And I was in a West Side Story.
Yeah. Just one day at one of these camps would be good for you.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. I did both. You can have both, best of both worlds, man.
Oh, yeah. That Abilene, Texas community theater.
Hi, y'all. Like me showing up. Hey, everybody. Hi. Get some water and pop. You come. You want to gossip. You come over here. If you want, got nothing nice to say, you just say it by me. You sit over here.
One act play was a legitimate competition. We used to do competitive theater.
Oh, that's what we used to do. You were thespians like I was.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. How many fucking productions of Steel Magnolias did I fucking see in high school?
Hey,
it was very popular.
Who wants to take a whack of Weezer? Steel Magnolias.
Okay.
Stop talking about me like I'm not here. Steel Magnolias.
I've never seen it.
Well, the deaths. Let's get back to the deaths.
Please.
Yes, please. Thank you.
The deaths in these wilderness programs, they were explained away by Steve Cardassano as an acceptable, quote unquote, window of loss.
Mm. What?
Hit the thing about a window of loss is that things get lost in that thing all the time.
It's a person.
And honestly, I keep telling these guys, we got to shut this window. And they don't listen. They're so busy spanking and not drinking.
Well, by Cardassano's reckoning, as he told a staffer who later spoke out, they'd be helping so many kids in these wilderness programs that it was worth losing a few.
Honestly, it's kind of nice because then it's like, I had 12 and it's like, oh, I got to talk 12 of you to the bathroom.
Right, that's
once I'm down to like 8, I can have them all piss in a row and I can just watch them as a group.
It's easier that way, sure.
But that didn't explain Cardassano's Puerto Rican facility where kids were found bound and gagged with nooses tied around their necks.
See, what? I feel that's extreme.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little extreme. Bit.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That Michelle Sutton death by dehydration, mm-hmm. written off as a tragic accident. No one had any charges brought against them.
No, even though
she was, she hadn't had a drink of water in 7 days. But tragic accident. God.
But she was a kid. She'd already, don't worry, because they'd signed a monetary contract. Mm-hmm. See, again, right. It's nobody's fault because they signed this incredible contract that just makes it all legal.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, I wouldn't say she had. I don't think you can survive 7 days without water, but she had very little water.
I think it was 3 days or something. Yeah. But yeah.
It's not good.
Yeah. No, it's not.
7 days to die of dehydration, yeah. But on the very small amount of water that she was given every other day. But Cardassano, he was taken down less than a month after Michelle Sutton's death when a kid in his care died from dehydration and hypothermia.
One that we can all attribute to God, right? Because sometimes God sucks, right?
Yeah.
But this second one, it's on me.
That one is your
this
fault?
This one's on me.
So is it the dehydration or is it the hyperthermia you're taking the blame for?
I'm just going to say, let's just call it a mulligan.
A mulligan.
I just need a redo on that kid. If I could, but everyone's saying I can't because it's dead.
Yeah.
Well, he was charged with negligent homicide, but he fled the country and he's never been seen since.
So he's still alive.
Hasn't been seen in decades.
He might be dead now. He's probably dead now.
Maybe.
The 80s? Maybe. How old was he when he was doing all this stuff?
No idea.
I don't know.
40s? What do you think?
I don't know.
Ballpark it.
I mean, technically, if you move to the Mediterranean, they regularly live to their 90s thanks to the olive oil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The seeded plants. You get the olives themselves are very healthy for you.
He probably went to Costa Rica. He had schools in Costa Rica. So
we should ask your, we ask your parents.
They're now deceased. My grandparents are both deceased.
Yeah. Well, I guess we don't have anyone else to ask about flee a country for various reasons. Well, perhaps the worst of these deaths came from a program called North Star, where a kid named Aaron Bacon endured weeks of torture at the hands of counselors. Bacon eventually developed an ulcer that ate through his stomach poisoned his blood and organs with intestinal bacteria. Now, he may have survived that. But Aaron was also suffering from hypothermia from being denied a sleeping bag in freezing weather, malnutrition and dehydration from being denied food and water, exhaustion from hikes that would last up to 8 miles, mental instability from being gaslit concerning his conditions, and infections from sores resulting from wearing boots that were purposefully two sizes too small.
Yeah, because it's supposed to teach him some kind of character, which it doesn't.
No, of course it doesn't. What's the lesson? What do you learn?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Well, tragically, Aaron could have been saved until literally the last hour of his life.
Yep.
And I say that with all seriousness, literally the last hour. Basic medical treatment, an IV, some Pepcid AC. But that wasn't the concern of the sadistic staff in charge of his well-being. In an example of what really mattered, one of the staffers wrote this in his journal 10 days into the journey.
I finally wiped a smile off that bacon boy's face. I finally broken his spirit.
And then he died 10 days later.
Congratulations.
I actually think technically, if you just describe, if you remove bacon and put Zabrowski in there, I think that's what Lorne Michaels wrote when he sent me my feedback for my Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, you can really relate to this. Oh. Yeah, you auditioning in a fully heated, well-hydrated room. Yeah.
It's in Manhattan, by the way.
I'm the victim
here. Yeah. Okay. Now, Aaron Bacon's parents did try working with investigators to shut down the program that killed their son. But the whole thing fell apart when their primary witness, a staffer named Mike Hill, was himself accused of sexually abusing a teenager in the program in exchange for extra food.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it went straight to, prison rules.
Of course. So, bribery, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, since Aaron Bacon's death, at least 12 teens that we know of have died in wilderness programs. 4 were related to heat and dehydration, while 8 were related to restraints.
Yeah, my buddy went to one of these, and he did not come back the same.
Yeah.
How long was he there for?
He was there for, I want to say he was there for a summer.
Oh,
because then
gosh.
I didn't see him along for a long time. It was rough. It was bad. It was not good for him.
Yeah. In one camp, a 65-pound 12-year-old was killed when his 320-pound counselor sat on him and refused to get up because the counselor thought the kid was playing possum when he stopped moving.
That's where all the fucking food's going. You got a 320-pound counselor? Yeah. You know he's got a golf cart.
Yeah.
Move on, kids. Honk, honk.
Yeah, the thing about a rascal is that it's such a fun-sounding thing for a thing that's not.
No.
Yeah, not at all.
There's nothing rascally about it.
Looking at a fat fuck in charge as you're starving and dehydrated is he sitting on you?
Yeah, it's all bad.
Yeah. But while the wilderness programs are certainly the deadliest genre in the troubled teen industry, the most infamous are its boarding schools. In particular, the one that has gained the most negative attention in the last 15 years or so is Alon School.
Now, I think the Alon School got as much heat as it did is because of how much publicity it had gotten in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
It was such a big deal that the fall was appropriately large as well.
For 40 years, from the early 70s until very recently.
Too recently.
Yes. Alon School subjected thousands of children to daily abuse, torture, dehumanization, and terror, both psychological and physical.
And not like the fun way. Not like when you go to Halloween Horror Nights.
No.
Because I learned nothing from them either.
No.
But it's fun to do. I like mazes, but I don't learn anything.
Well, it's a good time.
Yeah. Well, billed as an alternative school that specializes in behavioral modification for teens, Alon School was located in rural Maine because Maine had lax regulations and laws regarding alternative schools.
Yeah, think
it's an alternative school. You see how some schools, they educate you. We don't.
We de-educate you.
We de-educate.
Because again, yeah, Maine must have a crazy fucking crazy. Like the regulations there must be so lax because it's like, the pet cemeteries are out of control.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
and like, have you ever been to an antique shop that sells you your innermost secrets, but then you end up betraying everybody you know and love because it turns out the guy who owns the antique shop is the devil himself?
It's really scary stuff.
No regulation.
Have you ever heard their Senator Susan Collins talk? I think that she might be in charge of one of these.
Who's Susan Collins?
She's
Oh, yes.
Well, in other words, everything you're about to hear was, for the most part, totally legal.
That means it's right. So, episode's over.
Fantastic.
These kids, all between the ages of 12 and 18, they came from all backgrounds. They were poor juvenile offenders sentenced to a law school by judges. They were from wealthy families who just wanted to offload troublemakers. Sometimes it was just kids who were having trouble in school because of learning disabilities, or kids who were depressed, mentally ill, and or autistic.
Or just called being a teenager.
Yes.
Basically, it was anyone who couldn't fit in with traditional society the way that their parents wanted them to fit in.
It really is the entire cast of the Dream Warriors.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, for the low, low price of $60,000 per student.
Jesus.
Children were sent to Alon School forcibly, more often than not, through what's known as a teen escort company.
Now, Kissel, don't get too excited.
It's not what you're thinking it.
No, it's not. I was about to call it right up there. Again, as I joked about it in a previous live show, teen, you got 2 years, 18, 19. That's it.
Yes.
Well, teen escort companies are perfectly legal businesses that kidnap children from their homes in the middle of the night so they can whisk them away to boarding schools in the most traumatic ways possible. And it's all done with the complete consent of their parents.
Can you imagine getting into this business?
Yeah.
Like, just like deciding to start your own, being like, you know what I've always wanted to do? Put children in straitjackets. Every day I woke up as a kid, I wrote it in my journal. Oh, yeah. I wish I could subjugate children to torture.
Yeah, kidnap kids and then drive them for days at a time while they whimpered and cried and screamed in the back while I hit them over and over again.
Easy money.
Easy money. I would say they are not going to be the most sympathetic, but I'm sure there are some abusers as well that had some deep trauma from all of this.
Oh,
I mean,
of course.
The turnover for the teen abduction business must be kind of high.
Gotta be. As of 2004, there were at least 20 teen escort companies operating in the United States.
What?
Yeah, and they could earn anywhere between $5,000 and $8,000 per kid, depending on how far away the kid had to be transported.
You break it down by the numbers.
You break it down by, like gas money?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Now, teens were mostly picked up in the middle of the night to take advantage of their initial disorientation and to minimize confrontation and risk.
If they were really dysfunctional juveniles, they'd be up.
Yeah. They wouldn't be in the bedroom.
No.
Commonly, the kidnappers used violence, handcuffs, they'd hogtie the kids with cable wires, whatever was necessary.
Yeah, and they also do it because there's also a psychological edge, especially in Elon, where, like, you are no longer in control of your life.
Right.
The second those guys roll into your bedroom, you don't have autonomy anymore. Mm. You belong to us. So it is to dehumanize you. It's to lift you up like a dog.
What kind of parent could do that? But anyway.
No. And that's the thing. It's not only all legal, it is sanctioned by the Supreme Court.
They loved it.
Yay.
In 1979, the Supreme Court affirmed the legality of these programs in a decision to uphold the rights of parents to send their children wherever they deemed best, using whatever methods.
Again, we can also grant, those of you that have kids, maybe you do have a little psychopath child that you don't know what to do with. And I don't even mean this like derogatorily. I mean, like, maybe you do have a truly troubled kid.
You have Kevin.
Kid. Yes, you have Kevin. Like, maybe there is that, right? Like, but this is not what we're talking about. Like, this is not helping anybody in this scenario.
Yeah, I mean, this was based on the assumption that no parent would ever consent to abusive care. That was the Supreme Court's thinking.
Yeah, no parent would ever send their kids to a torture device, but they understand that most of them, they wanted it.
Well, Justice Rehnquist, if we outlaw these programs, we don't have any children to rape.
If we don't have any children to rape, what are we going to do for Christmas?
Yes, exactly. So we've been allowing these programs.
We really are the Supreme Court.
Recently, just a year and a half ago, a man named Julio Sandoval, who ran a teen escort company, he was arrested for violating a restraining order taken out by a teenager's father because the teenager's mother had threatened to send the kid to a troubled teen boarding school. And the father figured, well, if I put a restraining order out, there's no way she's going to break that. She did.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. She hired the teen escort company behind the father's back to break into the father's house to take the child away, to kidnap the child.
This is a year and a half ago.
So
lucky they didn't get killed.
Yeah. Well, allegedly, the teen was kidnapped and cuffed in California. Then he was driven 27 hours in handcuffs to a religious boarding school in Southwest Missouri called Agape.
Isn't that weird after the Jack Parsons series? Because we know what Agape. Agape is supposed to mean like an orgy. Yeah. Like an orgy of pleasure. It's like a whole thing. Like
A gay boy.
Yeah.
Well, that's not good.
Yeah. There he was held against his will until his father was finally able to track him down and free him. Other story.
Man, that's a lucky kid.
Yeah.
Like the fact that your father actually came. I mean, obviously, there seems to be a lot going on in the family.
There is. Yes. The mother was one of those. Yeah. Very, very insane.
Disciplined.
Crazy person. Yeah.
I mean, he gets to channel his inner Liam Neeson, knock down the door and be like, give me my boy back.
Kind of exciting as a dad.
Yeah, but
I think about Jackie getting kidnapped sometimes because it would be kind of fun to like go out on the road and go get her. Like me and Jeff, we get a couple of guns, we get a couple of fucking bags, masking tape. Yeah. We find the guys, fucking eliminate them one by one by one.
You really think you would do that?
Whack a guy's fucking knees with a fucking hammer again and get right while he's tied to a chair going, oh, Lord, yes. And be like, me thinks that you do and me Mr. Hammer says that he knows that you do. You know?
Well, what actually happened is you'd call 911 and then they'd be like, can you describe your sister? And then
she's this fucking bitch, right?
Yeah.
She's fucking there. She's got like a big head. And he's like little, like with a little head, big body, tiny little feet. And she's like, you hear me?
That was probably me.
Yeah.
Live from your grave.
Well, other stories being kidnapped include Hannah Kay. Hannah Kay said that she was kidnapped from her bed in the middle of the night when she was 13 by men that she believed were terrorists.
Oh, yeah.
Once she arrived at, again, the Agape school, she was strip searched in a room full of grown men and had her head shaved. Again, this is within the last few years.
Yeah. And they learned that from the Elon school.
Mm-hmm.
I think they learned that from our war on terror, right?
Another person who suffered this trauma said that for years afterwards, they slept with their bed in front of their door with a knife under their pillow, fully dressed in case they needed to run for their life lest they be kidnapped again every single fucking night of their life.
Wow.
Now, even though this should be highly illegal, the only state to adopt legislation banning teen escort companies is Oregon.
Oh, Oregon.
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 Guess when they passed their legislation?
2022.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yay. We did it. Yeah.
So that Kotech gal, did she pass it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Quite possibly.
Yeah.
So let's get back to the Elon school.
Okay.
Now, after a teen transport company finally arrived with a student at the aforementioned Elon school, the teen would suddenly find themselves trapped in a facility located in the wilds of Maine.
It was truly in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And it was all designed to be like a shocking experience.
Yeah.
Right. Because they put the kids out front. So you would be kidnapped by children. Right. You'd have a couple of guys too. But a lot of times, especially at Elon school, they'd hire a couple of big beefy kids. Right. The higher level kids that would also come. So you're in the car. side by side with two children already. And then you roll up to this, Jesus. Which at first you're because you're sold, like all these other schools, you're sold that this is this like summer camp experience. You're right. Going to, you know, canoeing and horse riding and all the things you do if you got a good tampon in, right? Like you can play tennis, you know, make arts and crafts and shit, right? But when you show up there, it's actually a series of trailers and rundown homes.
So it's really Camp Krusty.
It's very scary.
What a pop culture reference.
But real. But real. And then you'd see like a kid in a dunce cap on being like, ask me why I'm an idiot. And then you'd like see all these people doing these like weird
like Dick's
things.
It's like Last Resort.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And they do all of it. Like, it's like out on the lawn. And they design it so that when you show up, you immediately want to run away. They want you to be scared.
Sounds like it, dude.
And kids did try to escape, but so many tried running away that guards were permanently posted in the woods to catch them, which is even more terrifying.
God, yeah.
As the founder of Alon School put it in a 1979 interview, the first thing you learn at Alon is that you're not going to get out of there. That was something he was proud of.
Great, thank you. How brave.
But in 1993, one teenager did manage to get out, but it was a tragic case of jumping from the frying pan into the fire. That year, 17-year-old Dawn Birnbaum finally made it past the guards after multiple escape attempts, and she was soon picked up by a trucker when she hitched a ride. 12 hours later, Dawn was a corpse on the side of the road, bound, raped, and strangled to death with a ligature by the same trucker who first picked her up.
Oh, my God.
That trucker, by the way, James Robert Cruz Jr., strongly suspected of being linked to a series of trucker murders in Ohio that suddenly stopped after his arrest.
Wow.
God damn. That's fucked. Poor that's girl. Even. Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah. Now, after it was explained to a newly arrived teen that there was no way to escape a law school, probably using Dawn as an example of what would happen if they left.
Oh, it was a gift to them.
Oh, yeah. And it was 1993. They kept going for a long time after that.
Right.
They'd be forced into a shower as the staff watched.
Called intake.
Mm-hmm. Girls would then get vaginal smears and rectal exams, while the boys had to give semen samples and get tested for venereal disease, which I'm sure was the old Q-tip up the pee hole.
Yeah, I hated that,
man. I'm Susan Collins. I'm just here to make sure that these boys give semen samples.
You don't want to go up that roll. That's where the penis Q-tips are.
This is the semen sample, baby, right?
The kids were then given bland, colorless clothing to erase their individuality, and they were thereafter cut off from the outside world at the Alon School's discretion. All mail was read and monitored. Anything deemed inappropriate was confiscated, and all outgoing mail was censored.
That's a part of why it did last so long, right? Because these kids could not write what was happening to them. They were basically saying, like, lie to your parents. I forgot that there was a term that they used for the letter that they wrote. There was, like, I want to say it was called, like, a guilt letter. I wonder if it was called a guilt letter.
It was a guilt letter, yeah.
And what they would do is they'd write, being like, Elon School's magnificent.
Yeah.
We love every minute here. It's
like, and I'm very sorry for what I've done to you.
Yes.
Yeah. After a while, students were allowed to call home, but they could do so under heavy monitoring. If the student began to talk at all about the abuse suffered or about anything that might make the school look bad, the call was cut off and the student was severely punished.
You will go to sleep or I will put you to sleep.
No.
Once showered, violated, and dressed, the student was then assigned a big brother upon arrival. Big brothers were older students who were basically prison guards. They would enforce rules, and they would report infractions. Mm-hmm. And they're also fellow students.
Okay.
That's the thing, again, it's all kids on kids.
Yeah.
Right.
And cruelly, a common game amongst big brothers with new students was to pretend like they were planning an escape with the new charge. Then, when the student agreed to the plan, they'd be reported to senior staff, and they would be punished.
It's
often
called,
that was your first punishment.
Yeah, and it's called How Homeland Security Gets Its Budget.
Exactly. You have a great profession as an FBI agent.
Concerning that senior staff, most of them were in fact former students who had graduated. Some were, of course, psychopaths who took advantage of the system, but others were highly traumatized kids who had become converts as a survival mechanism.
Sure.
And I find this fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting because I was watching a documentary called The Last Stop, which was a big one on the Elon schools. Mm. And there are like one or two people in there that were like, you know, one of them cared. There was like one person who cared, like, because they had all a bunch of different Elon schools. And so some of them were kind of a little bit more like easygoing ones.
Yeah.
And some were the high max security ones. And so you see a lot of them people saying the lower ones, they were kind of like, oh, you know, I learned some lessons. But once you go to, I think it's Elon 2, which was like really fucked because Elon 1 was burnt down by the students.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Elon 1 was burnt. That's how bad the school was, is that it was literally burnt down by their own constituents. They had it, then they just rebuilt a new one right down the road.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's just Stockholm Syndrome survival, basically.
It's a little more complicated. Then,
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what do they call it when a prisoner gets institutionalized?
Institutionalism.
Yes. Yeah. Well, as author Maya Zolovitz puts it in her book, Help at Any Cost, people who go through these programs have been conditioned to support and accept the treatment they've received through the sunk cost fallacy. They overvalue their experience because they have paid so dearly for it already.
Mm.
Some participants, in order to just deal with the trauma they've gone through, they need to have their suffering to have served some purpose.
I get it.
Then once they feel the joy when the abuse is over, once they've graduated, they see their experience as transformative rather than useless and unnecessary.
It's like after you get through level 5 at UCB and realize you didn't make a house team and you spent $2,500.
Yeah,
but
now
you
you're just some bald guy in Converses that no one will fuck anymore.
But you are a slightly better public speaker.
Yeah.
Well, another tactic used in this vein is the mystical manipulation technique, which is a little closer to a cult strategy. Used mostly by faith-based programs like Straight Inc., the mystical manipulation technique makes the participant feel as if God himself is aligned with their goals.
Yeah, that is very, very interesting.
Yeah. See, if you're repeatedly told that everything happens for a reason, then any positive coincidence is seen as a sign that God is working through your program to further his goals. By contrast, any negative event is seen as, can you get this one, Ben?
The devil's doing.
Yeah, test of your faith.
Oh, test of your faith. Mm-hmm.
You know, in Straight Inc., they also do stuff where they hit you with, like, songs and stuff. Mm-hmm. Did you see the song, one of the songs that you have to do in Straight Inc.? I am straight, hear me roar, and numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend, because I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor. I am straight. Hear me roar.
I kind of like it.
It's not bad.
It's not bad.
A lot of these programs would use songs as a way to really drill the message into their heads.
In sixth grade, there was a smoke-free song that's "We Are the Smoke-Free Class of 2002, 000. Be a hero, not a zero." Something like that. But anyway, it was a smoke-free class of 2000.
Program didn't work. I think someone needs to go back.
I remember it.
I need to call. Can I call a Kissel escort company?
2000.
Wait, 2002? How did you...
I graduated in 2000.
You said 2000, but then that's why 000 made sense. But then you said 2002 in the song that you misremembered.
No, I didn't.
I'm calling a Kissel escort company to pick you up.
No.
I know you're going to like it.
Yeah, you just said 2002. Did you graduate high school when you were like 20?
No, I graduated high school in 2000.
Oh, okay.
I was 18.
Interesting. Maybe we'll look at your fucking records.
Yeah,
I was 63rd and 64th. TJ was 64th, and I wanted to be dead last, but he got dead last.
Yeah, I was 664 out of 666.
No kidding.
Pretty cool, sweet.
Wow, nice. That's a big school.
Number one.
There
know.
Was 9 people in your class.
12. Well, this way of looking at the world, you know, the whole thing of like, you know, if it's good, God's working through me. If it's bad, it's a test. It essentially rewires your brain into a new belief system where the program is the only thing that matters.
Because again, it's you're in or out. Because once you're in it, you're fucking in it.
Yeah.
And you're not getting out of it. Yeah. So you have to find out a way to work your way through. Besides just killing a bunch of people until the cops come get you, you have to kind of ship up.
Mm-hmm. And then once you abandon your old value system for a new one, the things that you might have previously thought wrong are suddenly right. And it's being done for the greater good.
Mm.
And when you put mystical manipulation and the sunk cost fallacy together, victims will eventually become enthusiastic perpetrators who can't imagine acting any other way. In fact, many are often surprised and bewildered when they're later told that they were committing criminal abuse. That's even after they're arrested for it.
Because again, it feels institutionalized.
Yeah.
Because it feels, well, it is institutionalized, but it feels like it's a part of the American system because you're literally supported by the U.S. government while you're doing all of these things under the auspices of training and helping kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have the full green light from the U.S. government at that moment in time to do whatever it is that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's until afterwards, everyone's like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
What happened? Yeah.
Now, the average student at Elon School was there for 18 months, but some could be there as long as 4 years.
Ooh.
Usually 150 students were living at Elon at any one time, and those 150 were split between 3 buildings housing 40 or 50 students at each structure. Following a strict social hierarchy where the students were made to police and inform on themselves, everyone was split into two classes, strengths and non-strengths.
Mm-hmm.
Non-strengths couldn't talk to strengths or non-strengths, but strengths could talk to non-strengths. If a non-strength talked to a strength without being addressed first, or if they talked to another non-strength at all, they would be in violation of a list of rules called guilts. Breaking any of the guilts, whose numbers reached into the dozens, would result in severe punishment.
And it was extremely complicated. You could see it was extremely complicated because the whole point was to fuck up.
Yeah.
So that you could get checked again and again and again.
It's a form of psychological warfare. It's designed to make students conform to the exact standards of the school and society at large.
Quote unquote society at large. It's about becoming like a faceless, nameless person in a machine.
You could have done well here, Henry. You like D&D, a lot of rules, a lot of scolding.
I couldn't. I had to drop out of karate because I couldn't call the guy sensei.
Well, I was like, who's this guy? That makes sense.
The whole time I was like, why am I going to call you? What are you?
Well, because you're in Queens, New York.
Exactly.
Close to where karate is invented.
The first thing I remember was why I got called little devil boy in Catholic school, like when I was doing Sunday schools, because like the priest, when we were talking about, I remember like being real young, being like, why do I have to tell my sins to you? Who are you? I just talk up to the big guy. And the guy was just like, you see, I got the whistle. God shows up,
Henry,
and I got the little bells.
Let me tell you a little thing about a spank bank. So when you tell me your sexual fantasies,
I get it.
You're investing in my spank bank.
I get that. Yes. Why didn't you just say that?
No problem.
I get now that you were making a joke. I thought for a second there that the whistle was something that priests actually have. How little I know about Catholicism. That's how they control children.
No, we got the bell. Whistles. They got that. They hide the bell to make you think that you're actually like transmuting the fucking the Eucharist to human flesh and shit. It's all smoke and mirrors.
Well,
there's
one cool thing about the Catholic Church, though. You know, the big old table that they got there, every church, it does have a saint's bone in it.
Which is
kind of cool.
Well, guilts included, but we're not limited to, talking too quietly or too loudly, talking too much or not enough, talking about anything not related to a law in school.
And we're going to be in trouble for that already.
Am I too loud?
It's just checking you.
Yeah, it's just checking you, man. You could get a guilt for looking at someone of the opposite sex, avoiding looking at someone of the opposite sex, looking outside, looking at the floor, having negative body language, being sideways, whatever the fuck that means.
Yeah, what does that mean?
I don't know.
Going like, you can't see it on the show, but it's side eyes.
Side eyes? Yeah.
Snarkiness.
Snarky. You don't want to be snarky.
Aubrey Plaza would do very poorly.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's her character.
You could get guilt for not falling asleep, sleeping too long, laughing at jokes, eating too much or not enough, rolling your eyes, swearing without permission, making any physical contact, couldn't even shake hands, or if you voiced or showed any dissent.
And we like to announce our valedictorian of 2023, Ben Shapiro. He actually just absolutely nailed it.
The only time I want a woman to be wet is when the tears are coming down her face. That's a fun Ben Shapiro joke about an old meme.
It is funny.
Well, the amount of impossible to follow rules at Elon School guaranteed that a teen would break a rule and break it often.
Yeah, because they're abstract rules. They're not even fucking real tangible rules.
They are done to be broke. They are done to make you get punished.
Yeah, and it always brought severe punishment.
And the kids all would they would chattel on each other throughout the day. Mm-hmm. Right? So you put in like little like saying like, I saw Jeremy like look at this girl. And the idea is that because we'll get to general meeting.
Usually a guilt would be reported by expediters, other students who acted as guards. And once it was reported, the staff would decide what to do. Punishments were called learning experiences or LEs. And the goal of almost every LE was public humiliation.
General fucking meeting!
No! Yeah. This is like when I had to push the basketball with my nose across the court on all my hands and knees.
I was actually really expecting a lot more traumatic stories from you.
Yeah.
You want?
No, actually, let's wait. I saw the vault. Like, I saw the back of your eyeballs look through the vault. Actually, let's hold. We have two more episodes of this.
Yeah, great.
Well, at the lowest level, possibly for something small like looking outside, groups of four students called dealing crews would scream insults and slurs at the offender for extended periods of time, which was the only time students were allowed to swear during those insults.
They needed to, because it's all general meetings. You're supposed to rip somebody to fucking shreds.
And now we'll like to enter tonight's entertainment. Jeff Ross, he's here to roast you.
Funny stuff. I don't think he'd like this.
No. No, I don't think so. This isn't really roasting because you're supposed to roast with love.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
No, this is uncorked roasting.
Yeah, roasting's even difficult. You're talking about joke structure.
Yeah.
It's just yelling.
It's just screaming. Yeah, structure.
Yeah. But for other relatively small infractions, like smiling without permission, a student would be given what was called shutdown duty, which was menial labor like scrubbing trash cans or cleaning bathrooms with a toothbrush. Sometimes you clean the toilet with your bare hands.
That's fantastic. Well, I can go. Well, anyway, we've all done that before.
He skipped the part where he said what it is that he did. I don't want to know. Again,
no, we don't have to.
Got two more episodes.
We don't have to know. Yeah. We don't have to know.
Well, in a more bizarre tactic, students were given costumes or signs to wear, depending on the infraction. If a student acted immature, they would be forced to wear diapers over their clothes, put pacifiers in their mouths, and hold rattles. And sometimes they wear a sign that says, "I'm a big baby."
Okay, it's kind of like the hazing from that one fantastic movie, Dazed and Confused.
No, it is a little bit of that. It's also just a way to debase someone completely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because in Dazed and Confused, that's like 30 minutes, maybe.
Yeah, no, and
20.
They're free afterwards, and they're really accepted, and then they get to go to the big kegger afterwards.
And I did do a thing in Sunday school where I got to stand on my knees and hold two books in my hands.
Sure, like Justice, like Lady Justice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or like Jesus Christ.
Just like him.
Just like Jesus.
Yeah, with the mouth open for sucking.
Well, if a kid even considered escaping, they'd be labeled as a split risk. And they were given shoes without laces and were forced to wear bright yellow shirts and tiny pink shorts. Very Joe Arpaio of them.
Yes.
And if they were still considered a risk or they tried escaping anyway, their legs would be shackled, they'd be forced to wear a pink bunny suit, and they were denied shoes.
Jesus.
I mean, and again, they're all laughing at it. No, the kids are laughing
at
it. Yeah. And it's very just because a shot down also would mean that you'd go from strength to non-strength.
And it's also, it is juvenile sounding, but it's just so deeply traumatized.
That is the crux of it.
And the kids don't actually fully know how fucked they are getting.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is exactly what happened.
Well, it's because it's encouraged of like, oh, it's your turn now. You know, I get to heap abuse on you because you heaped abuse on me last time.
Now I get to do it.
It's called marriage.
Well, technically, what's like fucked up is that it's their view of what life is. You know what I mean? It's their view of what they think that it's a transactional punishment system. And that's all being an adult is you go to work. You come home, you hit your wife. You know what I mean? Like, that's all you did.
Well, girls who were thought to engage in any sort of sexual activity were first to wear signs that said, "Ask me why I'm a slut," while others would wear signs that said, "Help! I'm an emotionally crippled monster." T-shirt time. We got to make that fucking t-shirt. Yeah.
That's merch.
Help! Yeah. I am an emotionally crippled monster.
Period.
Help! Exclamation point. Crippled monster. Period.
They didn't trademark it. Let's,
No, yeah, it's
that'll
our
be
time.
That'll be our next shirt that we donate to charity.
We'll sell that shirt and give it to the kids.
Yes. Yeah, the kids. But if the psychological humiliations didn't work, staff would move on to the physical. Students who acted crazy were put in straitjackets for days, weeks, or months at a time. Then they were locked in a small room called the corner.
All of them said that they would prefer the physical abuse to the corner.
Yeah.
Every kid that's in these interviews.
Yeah.
And Elan School wasn't the only place to use forced isolation. WASP was even worse. They had the box. That was a 3x3 foot structure made of plywood built again on a concrete floor.
Oh, my God.
Masturbation? 3 days in the box.
Just fucking
automatically.
Just let me in there for a month. I'll just keep jerking off.
Yeah, like Randy from South Park when he finally got to come after they lost internet. Yeah.
And sometimes students would spend weeks in the box and they were only let out for showers and bathroom breaks at staff discretion. This is Iraqi shit.
To be fair, you don't need a bathroom break. Or you don't need a shower. You do need a bathroom break. It doesn't matter if you stink in there, I guess.
At some point, it depends on what level you're doing. We'll get to it. But if you do fight as much as possible against the system, you could just pee your own pants, but then they do punish you for
that. That's horrible. Yeah.
But at Elan School, once you were in the corner, you'd have to sit up straight and face a wall constantly or you were beaten. You'd also be given a toilet bucket that you sort of had to figure out for yourself because straitjacket.
Yeah.
But sometimes they'd just dump it on your head for really no reason. No
yes, that was a big thing that they did there.
Yeah. Now, dumping disgusting things over people's heads. This was a common tactic at Elon School. So much so that they even had a name for their special slurry. They called it electric sauce.
Yeah, that is so fucking gross. If you are busted for swimming in a porta potty at the next Lollapalooza, you can get some sympathy by just saying, I was actually at an Elon School. This is the only way I learned how to have pleasure. And then it will be flipped for you. Mm-hmm. But wow, that's really bad.
But it's also why Guy Fieri had to change it to donkey sauce. Because he said that donkey sauce sounded more palatable.
It is more palatable, and it's Guy Fieri.
That's right. Electric sauce was a mixture of garbage, ketchup, mustard, cigarette butts,
Jesus.
And sometimes human feces if they're feeling froggy.
Just sometimes.
Just sometimes. And that slop would be poured over the offending student's head as punishment for whatever. I actually think it's worse that the human feces is only sometimes.
Why?
Because you never know. If you come to expect the human feces every time.
You can build up an expectancy to anything.
Well, maybe that's something they can debate at their next big meeting.
Perhaps.
Always have it?
The Elon schools are thankfully over.
Yeah. Thank God.
Well, sometimes students would be handcuffed to tables or their own ankles for days, and spanking with ping pong paddles were common. All of this, of course, encouraged rampant sexual abuse at Elon School for both pleasure on the part of the perpetrators and punishment for the students.
Yeah.
One staff member defended the molestation of a girl by calling it love therapy.
Ugh.
While other girls were locked in rooms with boys who had histories of rape, sometimes for weeks at a time. But at the end of it, the punishment at Elon School that's probably the most well-known is the ring.
Yeah, this is for the last chapter.
Mm-hmm. I don't like it when they have these kind of ambiguous names.
Well, that's how they do it. It's all cult mentality shit.
Yeah.
Used as both a means of entertainment and punishment, the ring featured one student as the star of the show. If a student committed a big enough guilt, he'd be pushed into a boxing ring, given gloves and a mouth guard, and dubbed the bully. While the entire student body hurled abuse at the bully, the kid was forced to fight a never-ending stream of opponents with no rest.
Yeah, you just have to keep going, and they just send in fresh guys. And they would start with the big kids, and they just keep sending in people. Because according to the founder of Elon School, he was like, the bully can never win.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And this was naturally too much for any teenager to physically handle. And before long, they'd be beaten and bloody, usually collapsed in the ring from exhaustion. Yeah. At that point, students would sometimes prop up the bully while the beatings continued, all while the rest of the student body cheered on the process.
Basically, because it wasn't them.
Yeah. Right. It wasn't them that time.
Yep.
Now, the ring was well known to Maine state investigators for years, but they actually defended the use of the ring by saying that it was only used when the offending student committed repeated acts of violence and the bouts were supposedly evenly matched.
But it also kind of feels like, why didn't you call the police then?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, instead of you bunch of random people, they're a truly violent and scary person.
Yeah, but it seems like one of those things where, like, we take care of our own.
Yeah.
You know, and they actually get respected for taking care of their own and not involving, not using social services, not using their taxes.
Right. Yeah, because then they'd have to do their jobs.
Yeah.
And that's a fucking, that sucks.
Yeah. I love the ring.
You want to go down that road?
It's a fine sport.
They're going to pour poo-poo on your head on that road.
Yeah, I love.
You might as well say, yeah.
I love.
Because sometimes.
Do the poo-poo.
That is better.
Yes.
Well, that even matching in the ring, that did not seem to be the case for 15-year-old Phil Williams, who died in the ring in 1982. Now, Phil suffered chronic migraines, but when he complained of headaches at the Elon School, he was put into the ring because complaining was a guilt.
Well, they also said that he was faking it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's everything is faking it. Nobody ever has any actual real medical problems. It's always faking.
You're just trying to get out.
Yeah. Well, Phil lasted through the constant barrage of punches from rage-filled teenagers for 10 minutes, refusing to fight back the whole time. But after 3 rounds, he collapsed, vomited, turned blue, and died.
Oh, my God.
Now, his family was told that he died from a brain aneurysm unrelated to the ring. But a student later got a hold of the family and told him what really happened. But since the Maine medical examiner's office did no autopsy, put it down as natural causes, nothing to be done.
Well,
because
wow.
It was the word of the students versus the word of the staff.
Again, the Maine medical examiner has got, like, he's got to deal with, like, A dude got his arm bit off by a phantom clown.
Oh, that was horrible.
He's got, like, that was fucking terrifying. And it turned out then all these kids went up to ham on their little girlfriend. And then
his, his face got ripped off by sap.
Yeah, that was crazy. You gotta be careful.
Yeah, what else do they have to do in this town other than look into this?
Oh, have to defend themselves from the imagination of Stephen King at all times.
Incredibly, the ring was still used for another 20 years. But presumably after the death of Phil Williams, a law in school changed what happened if a student refused to fight back. Instead of beating them until they died, the staff would call what was known as a general meeting, dreaded by every student at a law in school as the worst of the psychological punishments.
General fucking meeting!
I don't want to go.
In a general meeting, which could be ring-related or not, the entire student body would convene in a dining room after a staff member screamed,
"General meeting!"
Once all 150 or so students were there, a broomstick was placed on the floor in front of the student who had committed the guilt that resulted in the general meeting, and all the other students stood on the other side. The staff would then order the students to, quote, "get your feelings off," and a session of screaming insults would begin that lasted between 40 minutes and 2 hours.
See, they don't understand is that you could get all of this out if you just get yourself a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And you can yell and scream. I'm a professional yeller.
Yeah. I don't think they had that yet, though.
No. Well, they had radio.
Yeah. Yes. But that took a lot. I mean, technically, I had to go to college for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it did nothing.
It's really kind of victim blaming, isn't it, Henry?
No, I am not saying I am being a fun person.
Okay. Okay.
Well, every student would either take turns or all at once scream abuse at the guilty student, saying whatever they wanted, however they wanted, no matter how cruel the statement.
It needed
and in fact,
to
the
be
cruelty
cruel
was the point.
Yeah, it needed to be cruel. Yeah.
This was an attempt to thoroughly, mentally, and emotionally break the teenager. And while it might sound rare, general meetings were called multiple times a day.
All day long. The chaos. And like, I guess that's also like what made the Elon schools that much more notorious than the other ones is just the general sense of total chaos that the environment was. Because it was, these things were all popping off around you all day long. You never knew where you stood.
Yeah. Right.
Everywhere you went, you had eyes on your back. You were all hanging yourselves by the same noose.
And it happened so fast, you can't even think.
No. Yeah. And in addition to that, there's a surreal nature to it because you look and you see a guy dressed as a gigantic baby. You see a girl wearing a pink bunny suit with her leg shackled.
Yeah.
Nothing makes sense.
It's what the CIA did during the Satanic Panic, dressing everybody up as the Illuminati and shit. You got a guy with a Bill Clinton mask on doing a bunch of weird shit just to make you sound fucking crazy.
No, that was Bill Clinton himself.
Yeah.
But this is the interesting thing because it makes you sound crazy when you get out, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's a baby over there.
Yeah, it
there's
makes
a guy
it sounds
in a
like you're making
suit.
Shit up.
Like, okay, thanks for coming back on Donahue.
Mm-hmm.
Another fantastic episode.
Well, on a smaller scale, students would also scream at each other during encounter groups, where the offender would sit in a circle while their peers shouted the worst things they could think of.
Do you think that little people Ku Klux Klan members, or just think of what we're saying, do you think little people Ku Klux Klan members, do you think they have to make the shit like custom, or do you think they buy hoods for kids?
This is just a random thought that you had. I think that they would have to make it custom.
I think all KKK gear is custom made.
It is.
You mean
custom.
They have a tailor? It's like a mob?
No, I think their wives do it for them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Sexist.
Or maybe there's like Terry who's just like, he's a little different, but he makes our costumes.
Yeah. No one judges because it's like, I put a little extra wizard on yours.
Oh,
and they're like,
thank
you, Terry.
Yeah.
I won't beat you to death today.
Oh.
But the thing about all this to remember is that everything, from the electric sauce to the corner to the spankings to the mass beatings to the psychological abuse, it was all not only perfectly legal, but investigated and approved.
They loved it!
By the state of Maine. Maine investigated a law school 11 times after allegations of abuse, but they filed no criminal charges against the school.
Well, they also did clean up.
Mm-hmm. In fact, Maine Governor James Longley pointed to the fact that physicians and officials were still referring students to a law school as proof that nothing harmful or abusive ever happened there.
There you go. It's proof.
Yeah.
It's because
it's systemic beatings. It's proof.
It's also, again, when they showed up, there weren't any beatings. Right. Yeah. When they showed up, they're all like, we love it here. And they'd have like two kids doing jump rope in the front. They do like they would make
they faked it.
Yeah.
Of course.
Well, not that much. They still knew about the ring. They still showed them the ring. Yeah, this is where we put kids and we beat the shit out of them.
They just wish they could do it to their own aides.
Yeah. Well, similarly, when the media covered a law school, whether it be 60 Minutes or Sally Jesse Raphael, they fawned over it as a positive example of radical therapy that was going to save our troubled teens, who were, of course, far more dangerous and rebellious than any generation who had come before.
60 Minutes, also a total fucking lie. It's 36 minutes.
36 minutes with commercials. I also want to say to our, maybe some of our younger listeners, that's why, like, you know, in a way, you are like, at least you didn't grow up in this.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, they got
it's
different
a whole
shit.
Other thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, too, is like with the media, the 60 minute, there was a 60 minute segment on the founder of Elon School, and they fully showed the kids screaming. They showed them. They showed
they
how fucking
it.
Brutal it can be. And they're like,
Jesus,
it's radical, but it works.
It doesn't.
No.
No. But the thing about all these troubled teen schools and institutions is that they were usually created by a singular person, two at most. And many of the tactics were learned from unlikely places, especially concerning a law school and especially concerning the general meetings. There was a singular source of inspiration. That source was a drug rehabilitation program turned cult called Synanon, which is the story we'll tell on the next episode of our series on the troubled teen industry.
Yeah, dude.
All right. Brutal
shit. I want them to release the kids.
Yeah, release the kids.
Man, honestly, like, let the kids do whatever the hell it is they want, right?
Well, I mean, just don't send them to the highly abusive school where they're, you know, fucking shattered emotionally.
Is it so wrong for kids to have a couple of ciggies and drink some malt liquor and do some, like, fucking, like, a little bit of, like, fishtails and stuff? You know what I mean? Like,
no, it was my childhood.
That was my teenage years, yeah.
Is it that wrong?
Yeah. No, it's not.
Marlboro
it's
Reds.
Called, I mean, it's called adolescence.
And you learn. You get a big cigarette for the first time. You choke. And you choke up a bunch of blood and shit. And then I love to smoke now.
Yeah.
Right? And then you do that for like 15-20 years.
Oh yeah,
right. And then you're just fucking all fucked up.
Mickey's Big Mouths, they still sell Red Dog beer.
I don't know about Red Dog.
Coors
I do
Dry?
Remember it came in the 30s. No, Coors Dry, I think, has just turned into something else.
Bartles and James, huh?
Bartles and
that
James.
That was the shit that we like, man. I like a sweet.
Keystone, Natural Light, all
Boone's
the real
Farm. Boone's
Farm. Boone's Farm is still around.
What was
for
that
sure.
wine that had flavoring
Mad
in it?
Mad Dog 2020.
You know what I'm talking about?
Thunderbolt.
Something
Night
like Thunderbolt.
Train.
There
Blue
was
the, Nun.
There was one that was more like a lady. It was like, it was shop to ladies. It was called like Palisades or something.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, let the kids have a couple of drinks. Look, in Europe, they do
it
all the time.
Let
they
only, the only kids have to have it themselves. They have to figure out how to get it done and not get caught.
Makes them smart.
Absolutely.
I think so.
All right, everyone. Well, thank you so much for listening. It's educational, and I love this series. I was like, why are we covering this? It sounds very serious, but it is important.
I think we nailed it.
Oh, yes, we did. And you didn't fucking beat me down. No. You didn't beat me fucking down.
No, you're strong. You're strong. You're holding them vault doors together.
Absolutely. All right. Do we have anything to say to anybody? Release the Butthole Tour.
Release the Butthole Cut Tour is coming to a city near you if you are on the West Coast and in Los Angeles or the other city or San Francisco, then it is coming to you. We're going to probably be there.
I can't wait. And of course, San Francisco, I've seen it and they have released the Butthole. There is a lot of human shit there.
Oh, yeah. There really is. But in LA, we might make a little bit of an appearance. Come and check, see the Bourbon Room and see there. They put it together. It's a thick ass show.
It's fantastic.
And it's great.
Anything else?
I think that's all we got.
Last comic book on the left. We know with volume 2, due to supply issues, it was pushed, but
supply
it is coming out in February.
Yes.
Yep. So it is. We know. We've heard.
We've heard.
Listened. Learned. Grown. Shown progress. Moving forward.
All right, Henry, get in the ring.
Oh, no. Beat me, boys. All right,
God
come
damn,
on.
He flipped it and reversed it.
Spank the hell out of me. Yeah, harder, you bitch.
Flip it and reverse it. All
the
right,
ring
everyone.
Motherfucker, Bob Guccione Jr.
I was thinking him. Apparently, Axl Rose was kind of a tough dude in real life.
No, I bet. Yeah, look at if you have... I don't know, not dance.
Not to be all pop culture-y here, talking about Guns N' Roses.
Hey, Lafayette, Indiana, man, you don't come from those mean streets unscathed.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Doja Cat's not a cat at all.
No, she's not. apparently kind of eating feces there. But anyway, thanks for supporting all the shows here on the network, and hail yourself.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gein. Eating feces?
Doja Cat's eating
something
poop.
About
she
it.
She ate some poop.
She ate some poop
I
on purpose?
I don't know about
it. I don't know. Something with the kids and TikTok.
It's
some kind of eating poop challenge that the kids do.
That's the only pop culture reference and we don't know it.
What kind of poop?
We don't want to talk
cat poop?
It might be hers.
If it's hers, it's cat poop.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors. You can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.